doors closing.
This is Chicago and State.
I'm Dave Hoekstra, and this is Nocturnal Journal, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here in Chicago. And we're honored to have the great Ken Nordine, much as part of Chicago's snow in January and the Blackhawks in spring, the sound of the night and all is right. Thanks for joining us, Ken. I know this is not unusual territory for you to be here at night on WGN.
Love being here with Michigan Avenue at my shoulder. This is wild.
I love that voice. How long have you had that voice? I was going to ask you what puberty was like for you.
Well, it was a cliff. My voice dropped automatically. I don't know what it was. Probably the DNA got mixed up somewhere. I was dreaming of being a tenor, but nope, it just dropped. It worked pretty well for girls, though. They'd say, "Hey, you should be in radio." Yeah. I said, I'll never do that.
Now, tell us about your roots in, for people who've never heard the show before, never heard you, about your roots in Cherokee, Iowa, and what it was like growing up.
Oh, it was a little town, 5,000 people. Well, that's sort of a lie. It was really 2,000 people, but they had the state insane asylum there. So they had 3,000 people in the asylum. So it was civic pride that they put 5,000 when you drove in. But they did have, it's a town with their own symphony orchestra. A town of 2,000 people with their own symphony. Fantastic, unbelievable. I could have stayed there forever, but my mother had other ideas. She wanted my father to get out of town to come to Chicago. She could see that the orchestra was big, but the town was too small.
Your father was a, am I right, that your father was a minister?
No. I dreamt that he was a minister, but because my mother was extremely religious. She was a shrewd woman, a very good businesswoman, but she also, I think the religion was sort of counterbalance to her foxy ways. She's a very good businesswoman. So I was carried to church from infancy. So it'd be almost osmotic the way I was introduced and then swamped by Baptist religion. I was baptized, I think, 27 times. I wanted to be sure that it took.
Were there things, I'm trying to think about the rhythm of the voice and oration and stuff, were there things you heard in church, were there things you heard in Iowa, were there things you heard on radio? What were the earliest sonic influences for you?
Crickets.
Crickets.
Yeah, I wanted to bring some crickets, but they're getting busy. You know, this is the time of year they really start to talk to each other. They're the background that fireflies use when they're mating. Firefly goes by and you see him blinking his little fluorescent tail light on. It's the coolest light that nature has. He's really sending a signal down to the ladies that are waiting in the cricketed grass. And when one guy gets the go-ahead by his blinking, he flies down and they make some fireflies. Beautiful time. It'll be coming soon. July, we'll have that. Get in the yard and watch what's happening.
So crickets were a big early sound memory for you.
Out in Iowa, crickets actually are so loud, you just wonder how they can be that loud. They're rubbing their little hind legs together. That's how they make the sound.
Now, what brought you to Chicago?
Well, I was born there, but my mother brought me here to join my father. He built some of the buildings for the 1933 World's Fair. Remember the Depression? You wouldn't, but you can know of it. In 1929, things were so bad that everybody was, well, I think I got a Christmas present just in the middle of the Depression. It was a wooden clothespin with little eyes and mouth on the round part on top. It was that was in a dress on it. That was my little doll for Christmas. But then my father got this chance to be the superintendent of a big thing at the agricultural building for the 1933 World's Fair. That meant he would be working. And it was a blessing. That really helped the family a lot.
What neighborhood did you settle in?
The north side, pretty close to Wrigley Field. I used to park cars. I was a little infant out in front. I said, "Park your car, mister," because we had the space in front of our building, you know. And that was our space. They've taken that away now. We used to park cars under the elevator in back of the building. That's all been taken over. It's a big business now.
Yeah, it is. Now, somebody who like just absorbs all these sounds around you, what was it like to come into the city and just hear? We're going to play I Love a Groove here in a minute, but what was it like to hear the rhythm of the city, the groove of the city, the moving around, the L tracks, just for you to absorb all that?
Well, you see, when you're nearsighted, I was very nearsighted. The hearing becomes another kind of sense that's heightened when you have that. And so all the sounds, I lived next to the elevated tracks. In fact, the elevated was about 6 feet from my bedroom window, a little room I had. And by negative adaptation, after a while, I didn't even hear the elevator go rushing, crashing, thundering by. And the wheels creeping against the rails, and I didn't hear it. But you sure developed hearing for other things. Nature has so many sounds that we have negative adaptation to. We don't hear the crickets, so we don't hear the unbelievable chirps of birds. They're so beautiful, so out there. There's they're all talking to each other, of course. The development of a bird chirp must be a very interesting kind of innate development from the core of the DNA of the bird wondering what to say. And so he learns to whistle.
Now, do you want to set up this track?
Sure.
This was I Love a Groove. This was off the album with Jerry and David Grisman and stuff?
Yeah. Well, what happened there, they didn't know what to play. You know, he was a very free, grooving musician.
Jerry Garcia.
Yeah. He was out of control. So the best way to get him to do something was to say, "Now, find a groove that you're happy with. And I'll be able to tell when it's right, and then I'll hop on." And that's the way it went. We did a whole album, no cuts, no retakes, in one day. That's all he had time for.
Okay, you want to hear a little? Let's play
Sure.
I Love a Groove.
I don't know about you, but me, I love a groove. Something to me, something nothing else can do, has the power to sneak up on me, and wham, oh, I know, it's got me, the groove has got me good, feel it, slipping past the cuff, somewhere near the inner ear. I don't know how it does it, but it does. What happens, it seems to happen like it has to. Quick as a finger snap, and right in time. The groove makes its move. Gets hold of the nervous system. takes all that awful nerves away. Where the nervous goes, I don't know. Just goes. Goodbye, nervous. Nervous and jerky, goodbye. Because when I get near a groove, or when a groove gets near me, that's when it starts. Yeah. You can see it right away every time it happens. Good, got it all together. We're going now, groove, it's me. I begin to sway, back and forth. Begin to sway, forth and back. Begin to move with the groove. Inside the rhythm. Inside the beat. Every every hey, look at me. Hey, I'm right with the rhythm. Yeah, when you're in the groove, people know. When you're walking down the street, you can feel it. You can feel it in your feet. When the people passing by, see them giving you the eye. They know. See him smiling. You've got the rhythm. Yeah, you're in the groove. You're in the groove.
I love a groove. We're going to talk about that track after we take this break for some commercials. We're with the legendary Ken Nordine, so don't go away. Welcome back to Nocturnal General on 720 WGN. I'm Dave Hoekstra, and we're here with Mr. and Mrs. Ken Nordine. Thanks for coming down tonight. I want to finish up talking about that track. Howard Levy played on that.
Yeah.
Tell us about Howard.
Well, Howard has been a friend for years. He's a Chicago artist. Not only plays harmonica, which you heard in that, but he can play anything, piano, flute. He just has a feeling for music that is unbelievable. What was beautiful about it, the groove, they didn't arrange what they were going to do. They said, okay, we'll have a groove. And they knew each one how to fit in. And it was just a sheer beautiful rapport is the best way to describe it.
Where do the words come? Do you write the words down? Are they improvisational as well?
Out of my head.
Out of your head.
I didn't write down much of anything. Mostly came off. You got into the groove is what it was. I knew that there are certain cliches that we use. Cliches are great if they get groovy.
I've heard that. So yeah, they just come into your head. Now we haven't talked about your background as a voiceover professional here in Chicago for so many years and stuff. Did that inform like stuff we're hearing now?
Well, the commercials are. In fact, I did many of them here on WGN. I used to do the Chicago Symphony Orchestra commercials for Chicago Title and Trust Company. You don't ad lib a commercial right. About Chicago Title and Trust Company because that was a serious business. And I had to wear a tuxedo. Interesting thing, though, they didn't have teleprompters in those days. And they wanted to have the camera shoot long distance but short up of me because they had limited cameras they needed for the orchestra. So I had to memorize the commercials. And that was quite a trick. The commercial was about a little over a minute long. And I'd spend the day that I was going to do the show memorizing what I was going to do so that I would seem like I was ad-libbing.
Now you said you wore a tuxedo. Why did you do that?
Oh, because the whole orchestra was in black.
The whole orchestra was there.
It was just a very formal affair. It was a big show. It had an audience here. Yeah, there were a lot of live shows that were going on then, and across the street where CBS has its studios. I worked there for a while, and I had four names. I had my own name late at night, from like 10 o'clock until closing time. And then I had the name of Eric Lander and Michael Scott and some other name. I even forgot, blacked out on the name that I had, but different names on different shows. And I told Les Atlas, who was a big wheel.
Les Atlas, that's a good name.
He was a big wheel and a good friend. He had a son, Frank, that I knew pretty well. And I asked him about all the different names. He says, well, they're different shows, you see. I think they wanted to make sure I didn't get uppity. I finally went freelance under my own name, and then I could... It was very funny. I lost all those names the minute I went freelance.
What was your I've talked to you a lot this last couple of weeks. What was your relationship with the Blackhawks? Did you do Cold Steel on Ice? Tell us what that.
Well, I did Cold Steel on Ice for Bill Wirtz, Rocky's dad, and well, that was some time ago. It was fun, and there were about.
Now, when you say you did Cold Steel on Ice,
on radio,
yeah.
The commercial was. Just that phrase, cold steel and ice, be there. It's, you know, because they had the auditorium, the Chicago Auditorium was here, and they had about 5,000 people going. That was before it became very big. And
are you talking the auditorium or the stadium?
Chicago Stadium.
Yeah,
right. And not only was it lonely in there with 5,000 people, it was hard to get. There were moments of quiet in the hockey game. But that's because Bill Wirtz's father, Arthur Wirtz, who was a very successful businessman, he thought it would be giving it away to have it on television. So it was counterintuitive. When Rocky took over, he did a marvelous thing. He put it on television. Now everybody can see it. The place is packed. There's 18,000 plus people. They count them. Every time they play, and it, the tickets are hard to come by.
You go?
I go to all of them. That was a gift to me.
I know you're a huge fan. I mean, you're a real big fan. When I went and picked up stuff this week, I saw the Blackhawk programs in your.
Yeah, I have a Blackhawk jacket that I wear. Because from where I sit, I imagine that I'm telling them what to do. The other night, they got three goals in the first period. I said, oh, you're great. You're doing exactly what I want you to do. Then came the second period. You can relax a little bit. I shouldn't have thought that. Because the next thing I know, they got, it's 3-1. And the Wild gets another goal. It's 3-2. It's 3-3. This is ridiculous. You got to stop this immediately. So in the third period, I changed my attitude. Now you've got to make it. You've got to get a goal. How about Teravainen? He's new. Give him a chance. And Teravainen made the goal. And the place went crazy, man. It was just everybody. People, strangers, were hugging each other. It just, it's nothing like being with a winner. And the Blackhawks are winners.
How far, I was telling you before the show, how far back do you go with the Blackhawks? I said, I'm like Glenn Hall, where I throw up before every show.
Well, you know, he never wore a face mask.
Yeah, right.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I was there then. My God, I am ancient. When I think of that, I've somehow managed to get up to 90-something.
You just had your 95th birthday.
Yeah.
Right? April 13th?
I'm 59, really.
Isn't that amazing, though?
Dyslexic.
you're so vital, and it's just great.
Smoking. I stopped drinking. I'm very dull. I have an excellent diet, and a wife who watches out for me. She's a coach. She's a marvelous cook. And I should be getting fat, but we have small portions. It's I'm much happier too. I have no hangovers, no coughs in the night. I used to cough in my sleep, but that I broke the habit. I used willpower to do it.
Okay. We're going to take a break for the news, and we're going to come back and play a couple more tracks and talk a little bit more with Ken Nordine. Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal. I'm Dave Hoekstra. I'm here with Ken Nordine. We're going to set up this track, Faces in the Jazz Mataz. This was 1959. I think if we ever had a real theme song for this show, this would be it. I mean, I was only 4 years old in 1959, but you're citing the London House and the Sutherland. And so tell me about this track.
Well, those were all the big nightclubs at that time. I always wanted to do something about the musicians in Chicago, because there are so many great ones. There used to be a place called the Lealoa. It was a Hawaiian bar on Sheridan Road, a little north of Lawrence. And it was a Hawaiian bar Wednesday through Sunday. But Monday and Tuesday, Howard Levy, or Dick Marks was there.
Dick Marks, right.
Marks and Johnny Frigo.
Johnny Frigo.
And a singer. And I would sit in, and I would read poems that I'd memorized, and they'd back it up. Well, that was fine until I ran out of memory. Then I had to think of something on the urge. And so I'd sit in, and I learned to ad-lib, and I would write my ad-libs out a little bit so that it would have some shape. And Faces in the Jazz Mataz wanted to talk about the feeling that the city has, because the place was packed. Monday and Tuesday, you'd think there were a fight in the place because people are out on the street trying to get in. It was a small little bar, but it was very long distance from Hawaiian on Monday and Tuesday. So we had a chance to do all sorts of things. And from that, I said, I'll do something about the city and about the kind of music, kind of jazz we were playing, and the fun we were having in those golden olden days.
And I should say Dick Marks is on this, and Johnny Frigo plays bass on
Johnny
this.
Yeah.
And before we get into the track here, man, I think we're going to do something rare, which we don't do too much on the show. Want to take some calls?
Sure. Okay.
At 312-981-7200. Do I have that right, Dan? Okay.
I'll call myself up.
Yeah, okay. That's 312-981-7200, and here's Faces in the Jazz Mataz.
What do they mean? The faces in the night looking into the antique mirror of jazz. By what insistent instinct do we crowd the smoking dark and watch with our seashell ears the pounding truth break against the huge, inchoate spirit of this biggest of the little cities? And why do the stars of this spirit's music shine with such intensity upon the double zero of our blinking eyes? The questions multiply the mystery. Are we the face of get away from it all? Have another drink, baby. Live it up. Let's have a ball before the great big all goes up in fire and brimstone. Make mine a double and short on the soda. Clap hands in the reeling darkness and play lusty animal with the yeah, yeah, yeah of drowning night. You should have seen me when I stood on the table and the bouncer came with his tuxedo and the alcoholic air rocking with rolls of laughter after, while the ghosts of Dixieland's gone white are crashing through the changes inside the saints go marching in. One for the road and hiccup home to hangover. Are we this face? Are we the face of get there, get there, get there? Who's at the Blue Note? Who's at the Sutherland? Somebody's opening at the London House. Grab a cab and seize upon the tuck, ticking, ticky-tuck. Should I wear the mink? Somebody said something is happening at the Cloister Inn, and the long lines form in front of the revolving door of the spinning now, now, now. Do I look all right? Keep the change. I read in Downbeat, and the smoke rises above the hubbub as the cash register LPs come alive. Mr. and Mrs. Face face up to an evening on the town. 12 conventioneers, accompanied by a driving rat-a-tat-tat, become disciples of punchline pornography, and expense accounts rise in the falling jazz, and a waiter's feet hurt. something ends, and the applause begins. This clapping reward is bridge for the blues. Aren't you glad you came? Aren't you? Are we this face? Are we the face of I wonder as I wander, looking with the look that little children have for that loving something, for that joyous whatever it is, for that delightful I don't know what next, tired of playing run, sheepy, run and follow the leader? The game we're looking for is looking for us, and it's called 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, green light. A great, big, huge, unbelievably infinite go sign for this biggest of the little sleepwalking cities where the dream we dream is just around imagined nightmare's corner. Come on along to Renaissance, which is anywhere you want it. Hope swings eternal, and that's where everything is in Jazzmatazz Chicago. Don Quixote rides across the sprawl of us in a crazy movie called The Midwesterner, gallops across the jumping night where everyone waits to see where the real action is, and we strike our matches against old Chicago midnight, against old anywhere's midnight, somewhere below the nonstop jet from New York to Hollywood. Hi, stranger. Are we this face? All these faces and more we are. And the truth is right in front of us when our backs are turned. So pick up your trumpet and play this. Doomsday boys and girls of dust, come blow your horn for Mr. Must. Full circles roll in spirals down into the fright of the thinnest town.
Faces in the Jazzmatazz. I'm trying to do my Ken Nordine.
That wasn't ad-libbed.
Where'd you record that at?
It was down in Chicago here, Universal.
Universal,
recording.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's what I thought. Now, you know, people, I want you to, in your own words, people say what you do is word jazz. How do you describe word jazz?
Well, it starts with a premise. For example, it could be anything. Did you call your mother? That's the beginning sentence. Then the second, let's say the first sentence was something else. I thought of a cage went in search of a bird. That's something that Kafka wrote. That's your first sentence. Then your second is a very long sentence, and you're explaining what you mean by which would you rather be, the cage or the bird? Would you rather be something that keeps them something in place, or do you want to be able to fly free and do whatever you want? And that's the second paragraph, and that can go very, very long. But the third paragraph of what you do is explaining why you're explaining, and then you get into motivation of why you even are involved with such involutional intellection. It becomes a springboard into the spirit of where all your words are. Words are wonderful inventions. I sometimes try to imagine who thought of the words first. Who thought of bird? Who thought of cage? And the juxtaposition of those two. That's how I get started.
Did you run? That was 1959. Did you run with the Beats? Did you go out to San Francisco?
No, I didn't go out there. I did some commercials out there. I did a commercial for a paint company out there. It was a funny thing that happened. There was the Fuller Paint Company. They no longer exist. They were bought up. But I could do anything I wanted with color. All I had to say was the Fuller Paint Company mentioned their name, and the Fuller Paint Company presents a color, and then at the end, say, a century of leadership in the chemistry of color. So I'd do something for yellow, and I wrote in the beginning, oh no, long before that, when yellow was deciding who'd be in or out of spectrum, Yellow was in serious trouble. See, no one seemed to care, least of all Yellow. It was very bad for Yellow, and Yellow wept yellow tears for several eternals before there were years, until Blue came along. See, Green didn't want Yellow in, but that's the way it was. So I did Colors, and it went on the air, and people would call up, "Oh, play that again." And of course they couldn't. It was a commercial that they paid so much for each play to the station. So that was the death of the commercial there. They had to take them off the air. But I decided I had done 10 for them. I thought, well, I'll do a few more. So I did 34.
Right.
And it came out. Now it's been out as an album on Colors, which is one of the better things that I've...
We were going to try to squeeze some of those in. I don't know if we'll have... I want to play movie track.
You can see what we did with Yellow.
Yeah, Yellow's funny. It's good. Now, has anyone ever said that... Has anyone told you, like, this was the very first rap music?
No. It probably... The instinct is the same.
Right.
Music sometimes, I notice lately, is becoming so simplified. You get a riff of some kind, and it's up to two measures long, and then they repeat that. And it makes it very simple. That's why jazz, they wouldn't allow that. They couldn't be bored that easily. But it makes it easier to write a song. If you get two good bars, that's all you need. Repeat them.
You're very big in doing my reading about you and stuff and reading about you this week. You're very big on moments. I mean, you wrote, "Maybe the moment, whatever it means, is under a pile of old magazines that I can reread someday when I choose to find myself lost in used to be news."
That's a funny thing, a story of that. There's a guy in Evanston, Michael Klein. He has a magazine called Film Facts. And I write him Maybe the Moment in it 4 times a year. It's a quadrennial magazine. So, and each one is always begins with Maybe the Moment. And they're always 8 lines long, rhyming 2, 4, and 6, 8. But for example, Maybe the Moment is older than God and weighs twice as much. What's even more odd, before the Big Bang began to begin, guess who invented original sin? Well, that just sits there. Not too long, not pretentious, with a little illustration. And so I look forward to doing those. And as they are, they're lost in this wonderful magazine on old film facts, you know, things that have been happening in the film by independent filmmakers, hopers to be filmmakers. In fact, I've been doing a film in the computer myself called Ag and Bite of Inwit. I put it together, the whole film, about 68 minutes long, in the computer. Because you can do that now. You can play around with the images and distort them till they don't know where they're going.
You're doing that now?
Yeah.
You're working on that now?
Well, I'm working on a sequel. I'll call it Accident, I think. But Ag and Bite of Inwit, actually, what that means, the again bite of your inner wit. It's a phrase that James Joyce used in Finnegan's Wake, but he borrowed it from a Dominican monk who lived in the 14th century. So I borrowed it, and it's a great title for what I wanted to do. Ag and Bite means the again bite of your inner wit or your conscience. So I wrote things that had just something to do with that.
We're going to take a break for some commercials, and we're going to come back and play the movie. Is that okay?
Oh, great.
Okay, don't go away with Ken Nordine here on WGN. Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal here on 720 WGN. If there's any two patron saints of this, hipster saints of this show, it'd be Ken Nordine and Tom Waits. So I'm looking right at Ken Nordine. Do you want to set up the movie here? When was this done?
This was a conversation I had with Tom in the attic of my house.
Really?
Where I have a studio. And it's a little off the wall, but we were just talking one soul to the other. He's a good friend. I've known him for years. He's a great talent, no question about it.
But you both have such sharp wits. Yeah.
And my voice is smooth and his is rough, but it's the same kind of brain.
Okay, let's hear the movie.
I was talking to Tom about this movie that nobody wants me to make. It's a musical called M, starring Siamese twins connected by the lips.
Connected by the lips.
Now, I figured that how to do that, too. See, I have this dentist friend, very religious guy.
Yeah.
In fact, he believes in the laying on of hands, and he really would touch a tooth and make it better.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I go to him. I can't stand pain.
Right.
But I'm getting off the track. He has, I think he'd go along. He could be in the movie. I figured he should
all
be
right.
in the movie.
All right. Does he have any acting experience?
No. He'd be a reactor.
A reactor.
He's got this, mask that he wears.
Yeah.
And yellow gloves. He's afraid. He's very nervous. But I get the camera on him, a wide-angle camera on him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd ask him if he could make a double mouthpiece. What I'm thinking of, you've seen these things that they use in the circus?
Uh-huh.
Where the girl bites into this mouthpiece and they pull her up.
They suspend her by and she's biting onto some kind of a stick.
Up to the top of the tent?
Yeah, right.
Well, he'd make a double thing with a little rubber holding it together. And then we'd audition these identical twins.
Yeah.
And that would hold them together so it would seem, it would look like I'm talking about.
Right.
Maybe we should have a boy and girl. Are there boy and girl identical twins?
Well, they're not. I wouldn't call them identical. I mean, if they were boy and
well,
boy.
Well, maybe
and
that
girl.
Could be. Then they could be separated in the film.
Uh-huh.
See, the idea is not just that, though. That's just part of it.
Yeah.
There's another guy in the film that I try to help. Because I thought of calling the movie The Devout Catalyst.
Yeah.
It is a title.
Mm-hmm.
There's another guy who is a tattoo artist.
Hmm.
But he's avant-garde. He wants to do something very special.
Something new.
Yeah.
In the world.
So we go to this chemist that I know, and he makes a slippery ink.
Yeah.
So the tattoo, it just doesn't sit there.
Why?
It moves slowly across the surface of the skin.
Yeah.
Toward the nearest opening. See, there's how many openings are there?
Well, you mean orifice? How many? How many actual?
One, two, three,
four, five.
Whichever one it's closest to, it goes in there, and then it moves inside your body through the endothelium.
Yeah.
And say it was an eagle.
Yeah.
And it gets inside of you, and it gets digested.
Yeah.
Maybe it gets stuck behind your right kneecap.
Right.
You rub it and it gets loose. And when it comes out, it looks like a clay.
Right.
Or maybe a Roald or Thurber.
That's wild.
But
I got a little money laying around.
What we'd have to have with that is, that's a special effect.
Yeah.
We'll have to get some kind of a decal that will slide across this.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, when I tell anybody about this, they laugh, and so what I figure I'll do is put my own money in it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, just put.
But in the movie, the kids, my three kids, and my wife, want to have me committed.
Right.
That's the plot. That if you really do what you want to do, they'll commit you.
Yeah. Wow.
Be a great movie.
Well, are you going to direct?
Well, if we can get Jerry to do the music track.
The music, yeah.
And you could,
Maybe I could play a part.
You could be the guy I'm talking to about.
Yeah, right. I got you.
Get a far-out bar and sit there and star.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. The musical called M.
Well, I'm looking to diversify my investment portfolio, and I've been looking to get into something strange, so...
Hey, what we could do, we could have you in it.
Mm-hmm.
You take out your wallet.
Yeah.
And moths fly out.
Yeah.
That's a special effect, too.
You get a bug guy for that. They have bug guys in Hollywood. All they do is they work in the insect world. You're going to have a lot of medical footage in this, too, I guess.
Yeah, I could put that thing in about the January flies, too, in our bedroom.
Yeah. January flies? What?
That was insane.
What are January flies?
Well, we don't have them in Chicago, but in the middle of January, I went to the bedroom, and there were 20 of these almost as big as horseflies on the pink walls. And
That's annoying.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah. And they were sluggish because it was January.
They were a little slow.
Yeah, and I couldn't hit them with the paper because they'd splat.
Yeah.
And I couldn't spray them. You know,
you're going to sleep. You don't want that in the room.
No, I'd kill myself that way. So I got the bright idea to get the vacuum cleaner, and with the long hose, we sucked them into the vacuum cleaner.
Wow.
And then when I knew they were all gone.
Well, but they were in the vacuum cleaner, really.
Yeah, it's still alive, too.
Yeah.
Because it was like a wind tunnel.
Yeah.
They went down there. So I put some, tissue paper at the end.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't get out.
Hmm.
Yeah, but they come back the next night. There were 20 or 30 more.
Wow.
So, what I did then, I called a chimney sweep.
Chimney sweep?
Yeah. There's a girl by the name of Debbie Dove.
She's a chimney sweep.
Yeah, from Vermont.
Ah.
And she said, let me check your chimney.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a good place to start. I mean, if you have a fly problem, a lot of people will look in the chimney first.
And she took the barricade that I had so nobody could come in through the chimney. Mm-hmm. There were two dead squirrels inside there, you know. Just, and the flies belonged to the squirrels.
Oh, right,
Yeah, she sold us three squirrel traps for the chimneys, and we're safe now.
Yeah, no more flies.
Do you think we could get her in the film?
Gee, I don't know. We could write a part for her.
Yeah, we should.
You know, she have any film experience?
I guess we'd have to get two dead squirrels in the film, too.
Yeah, well, you get an animal guy for that.
Yeah. Gee, I'm so glad that you're interested in the thing, really.
Yeah, I think I'm ready to go into production. And so you just let me know.
Oh, great. We'll call it The Devout Catalyst.
I love it.
Yeah, good title.
A lot of action in the film, too, I guess.
Oh, yeah. There's a... I have one thing that I have this picture window ant colony that I'll have as a, for the titles.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
So the ants will actually spell out the title of the film and the credits.
Well, they'll actually pull little tissue paper credits.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. What about a fly with a little trailer with the title of the film on it flying around the bedroom?
Nice.
Well, Tom, you've made me feel a lot better. Thanks. Seriously, I thought no one would care. But thanks.
I'm there for you, Ken.
You're a pal.
Yeah.
We took it right to the news. Thank you, Ken Nordine, for coming down here. Maybe you want to come back later this summer?
Sure.
This was great. This is really great. Glad so we're very honored to have you.